Fans of the Fighting Irish have to wait a few more weeks to watch their team in the opening game battle against Michigan. Meantime, always and forever, and even if you're not a Notre Dame fan, there's Rudy. On August 6th, the warmly regarded 1993 underdog favorite starring Sean Astin as the improbable Notre Dame football legend Daniel Rudy Rudiger, or is it Rudiger or Rudiger?
Rudiger.
Rudiger. Celebrates its 25th anniversary with a Music Box Theater screening. The Tribune-sponsored presentation will be introduced by Rudiger himself in conversation with Tribune film critic Michael Phillips and Tribune sports columnist Phil Rosenthal. Highlights from the Music Box event will be used in a video accompanying the movie's return to nearly 700 theaters on August 28th and September 2nd across 50 states. Sony Pictures Entertainment and Fathom Events are handling the national re-release. So it's another Fathom event thing. That's pretty cool, though. Michael Phillips, Philip Rosenthal, and Phil Rosenthal. Now, are they going to, because here's what everybody has said about Rudy, is that everybody hated that guy. Like, you know, in the movie, you know, he's played by Samwise, so you got to love him immediately. And he's really lovable, and you root for him. But everybody in real life, apparently, you've heard this story, hated the real Rudy. Do you think Michael and Phil are gonna say, "Hey, I heard that everybody hated you"?
I if they do, I'm sure they'll find a tactful way.
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of resentment from your teammates like you did like it's shown in the film? Because I mean, I could see that. I watched it recently, kind of with that purview of like, you know, would they dislike it and like. You know, if that guy's going 120 miles an hour at the end of a two-a-days, you know, I could see them being like, dude,
yeah.
Relax.
Yeah. Well, all sports biopics bank on the triumph of the human spirit, selling variations on the value of dogged persistence to the end. Rudy's story is more dogged than most. It's about an ordinary figure, one of 14 kids raised in a working-class Joliet family, who played all of three play. Now, Esmeralda, did you know that he's from... He's from J-Town?
I did.
Yeah.
He played at the Catholic University, or the Catholic high school.
Oh, he did?
I believe.
Well, yeah, I mean, he went to Notre Dame. I would assume that it was the Catholic. I would assume it was a Catholic high school.
Yeah, Joliet Catholic Academy.
One of three plays in 27 seconds in a single 1975 Notre Dame game, utterly lacking in conventional suspense. The movie, written by Angelo Pizzo and directed by David Anspach, came to fruition 7 years after the same team found success with Hoosiers, another fact-based Cinderella story. Now, that's a good movie. Hoosiers is a damn good movie. You know, when Hoosiers came out, that came out in 1986, Hoosiers. When it came out, that movie, because you remember, well, you guys were young, but the Chicago theater was in a pretty sad state in the mid-80s. Like, it was run down. There were rats. It was just like, you know, it hadn't, it was in disrepair for many years. And so they closed, they shuttered it, I think, in like late 84, early 85. They closed it down. And then they did, you know, renovations of it. And the big event that opened the Chicago theater was a screening of Hoosiers. That was like the big reopening of the beautiful Chicago theater, refurbished and renovated, was a screening of Hoosiers, and I was there, and it was fantastic. So it was you know, seeing that movie for the first time in that circumstance was pretty awesome. You know what I mean? Like, in a theater that I grew up going to, but was, you know, sort of a grindhouse. It was run down, but full of amazing history and a really big, beautiful theater. And they did you've been there. I mean, you've been there since, and it's a remarkable, beautiful theater, and they did a great job renovating it. And going there to see Hoosiers at that time was literally, like, not literally, but it was very much night and day of what the last, because I remember the last time I was in that theater before it closed down, there used to be a screening room on the seventh floor of the Chicago Theater, and you would walk down the alley to get into the side door. That's where a lot of the movies were being screened there. I saw Back to the Future there, and you would take this rickety elevator. It was in the back of the building, and you take this rickety elevator all the way up to the seventh floor, and you'd get out, and there was this, you know, 50-seat screening room that they would show movies, and I saw a lot of movies there. And then they opened up a different screening room and another one on Lake Street, and that's where, you know, on Lake Street is where they show a lot of them when they're not showing them in movie theaters. So anyway, so that was like the critic screening. That's where I first met Dave Kerr. That's where Roy first brought me, you know, to screenings. It was the old rickety elevator in the Chicago theater up to the back. Now, here's the thing, though, is when I got there, they were like, hey, listen, here, you know, if you get off at the fifth floor, it takes you, the elevator opens up, you walk down the hallway and you're in the balcony. And I'm like, what? So it was such a treat. I remember because I, you know, like, you know, Dan, I went to that theater when I was a kid 9 million times.
Sure.
And to realize that there was a rickety elevator that led to a screening room, that was just like a.
I mean, I was stunned to hear you say that. I mean, like, that is awesome.
It's fantastic. And like, as a kid growing up, and then like Roy's like, oh yeah, there's a screening room on the seventh floor. I'm like, what? And the elevator was like old and it had a cage that you would have to close. It didn't have an operator.
Nice.
But it did have the sliding cage that you'd have to close. So you go up and then, somebody told me, they were like, you know, if you get off at the fifth floor, it leads right out to the balcony. And I was like, well, now that's good. So I remember one time and I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to like, I'm in the catacombs of the Chicago Theater, and now I know a secret on how to get into the balcony. So I get off at the fifth floor, and I'm by myself. It was at a screening, and I get off at the fifth floor, and I walk out, and there I am. I'm in the balcony. I'm in the and the movie that was playing, and I walked over and I sat. Nobody else was up there because this is like the middle of the day. You know, it was after a daytime screening. It was probably like four o'clock in the afternoon. So I walk out and I sit down. And Purple Rain was playing. They had re-released Purple Rain. So that was the last movie that I saw. I didn't even see the whole thing. I stayed for about a half an hour of it just because I wanted to be in the balcony and it was cool. And I walked around a little bit in the balcony. And there were like five people in the theater. There was nobody there. It was a weekday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon with a re-release of Purple Rain. And I think it was a double feature. I don't remember what the other movie was. But Purple Rain was playing when I snuck into the balcony out of the fifth floor from the elevator. It's a very specific memory, but that was the last time I was in the theater. Then they shuttered it, and then the next time I was in was the night they showed the Hoosier screening, and the balcony was packed then. And it looked beautiful. It looks as beautiful then as it does now. Like, they did a really wonderful job with it. So I always have, like, a specific memory attached to with Hoosiers because of that. So, but yeah, Rudy... maybe we can talk about true story movies when we get back. Take a break and see how much of them are accurate. Because Rudy, you know, because Roy had Rudy on the show. And so he was doing press tours and stuff with it, with that. And so Roy had him on. He had Sean Astin on. And, you know, I wasn't there for that interview, but I listened to it. And then, but then everybody was saying, like, when they weren't in the room, everybody was saying, everybody thought this guy was a jerk. Everybody thought this Rudy guy was a jerk. And they've really made it corny and stuff for, you know, dramatic purposes, which is fine. You take, you know, when you're making a true story, it's, you got to take some dramatic license. But apparently he was a jerk. So I don't know. I don't know the guy. But you can find out August 6th, because I think Michael and Phil are going to ask that specific question. Hey, I thought you were a jerk. All right. Let's take a break. Come back, talk a little bit more about true story movies. And we got a lot more stuff to talk about here. And the Friday features will begin in a little bit. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on the 18th floor at 303 Wacker. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on this Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday coming up, straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, and more. So, yeah. So we were talking about Rudy. Rudy is 25 years old, if you can believe it. Not the person, the movie Rudy. I was just speaking hypothetically about a guy named Rudy that he's 25 years old. No, the movie Rudy, based on the true story, the Notre Dame football story. It took 10 years, Rudiger says, of the movie's development, but I did it. They spoke on phone on Tuesday evening. 69-year-old Nevada transplant, who makes his living as an author and a motivational speaker, had just landed in Indianapolis for a gig with the Associated General Contractors of America Safety and Health Conference. Notre Dame was totally against the idea at first, he says of the film. The athletics department didn't want to see a movie about a guy like me. Not the usual best of the best type guy, but gradually they understood and they approved it. Rudy became the second football biopic to be filmed at Notre Dame. Newt Rockne, All-American from 1940, was the first. While attending Joliet Catholic Academy in high school, Rudiger played guard and linebacker. The teenager coped with undiagnosed dyslexia until he found the right mentors and educators at Holy Cross College across the road from Notre Dame. Rudiger improved his grades and kept his eye on the prized goal. He was accepted at Notre Dame on his fourth try. In his final year, after serving as a glorified tackling dummy in scrimmage after scrimmage, he dressed for a single game and managed to sack the Georgia Tech quarterback in the final seconds. For his valiant efforts, he was carried off the field by his teammates on his teammates' shoulders. As Joanna Steinmetz wrote in the 1993 Tribune Review, carefully building climax upon climax, the story spirals into an underdog triumph, every bit as tearful as that of Rocky. The movie co-stars Ned Beatty, Lily Taylor, Jon Favreau, Robert Prosky, and in a bit part, Vince Vaughn. In those these days, Rudiger says, good movies with a good message are hard to find. They're hard to market. That's what they told me when I went to Hollywood back in 1982. But Rocky, Field of Dreams, Hoosiers, they're all about dreams. It's the idea that if you stick to it, something good can happen. I'll tell you, buddy, Rudiger tells me. Every week I hear from cab drivers, executives, all kinds of people. When they were growing up, they used this movie to keep going. It's really something. How about that? Such a lovely movie. It is a good movie. It's corny as hell, but it's good. Esmeralda, have you ever seen Rudy?
I have not.
I didn't realize that Vince Vaughn was in it. I mean, I haven't seen the movie in a long time. But he has
Favreau's in it.
I was going to say, he has to be in it because legally he has to be because Jon Favreau's in it. So, Robert Prosky, Lily Taylor. Boy, a lot of Chicago connections here, man. And the great Ned Beatty. Come on, man. Ned Beatty, he rules. So we don't know. I mean, you know, like a lot of people said that it wasn't very accurate in the way that it portrayed Rudy. Just because a lot of people are like, you know, a lot of people hated the guy. But we have here, Dan, thank you for this, Dan, by the way. We have 10 historically accurate movies. Flags of Our Fathers. This was the Clint Eastwood movie. And there were two, because he did the two World War II movies back to back. And it was Flags of Our Fathers and Letters from Iwo Jima. And Letters from Iwo Jima is better than Flags of Our Fathers. But they say that this is an accurate movie in terms of like what it's, but the story that it's based on. In 1945, Joe Rosenthal's iconic photograph of U.S. Marines raising the Stars and Stripes on the captured island of Iwo Jima brought fame to its subjects. Clint Eastwood's epic war film was based on a best-selling book written by the son of one of the men in the photo, James Bradley, who also provided narration and interviews with veterans for the movie. Flags of Our Fathers' depiction of the horrors of warfare and the tragedy of what comes after was praised by the U.S. Marine Corps' chief historian for its attention to detail and historical. It was accurate. Lincoln, the Steven Spielberg motion picture with Daniel Day-Lewis. Historians and critics gave a warm reception to this painstaking recreation of President Lincoln's fight to have the 13th Amendment passed in the closing months of the American Civil War. The film was shot in Richmond, Fredericksburg, Petersburg, and Virginia, where historical architecture from the period remains today. Daniel Day-Lewis received widespread accolades for his masterful performance as President Lincoln. He won that year, didn't he, Dan?
Yes, he did.
Because he won for There Will Be Blood. And that was in 2007. So then in 2012, he won again so he's won three, right? Because I think he won for My Left Foot in 89 or 9. Well, they would have given him the award in 1990, but the movie came out in 89.
You are correct.
So those are the three that he's won. He won for My Left Foot, There Will Be Blood, and Lincoln. He was nominated last year. I was surprised by that nomination. I was surprised by the multiple nominations for Phantom Thread, you know, in general. I was thrilled. My main man, P.T. Anderson, gets himself a nomination. The movie gets a Best Picture nomination. That was pretty cool, man, because I didn't expect it, because, you know, the movie didn't do anything in the box office. But it was a great movie. All right, how about this one? Das Boot. Oh, it's a submarine movie. Yeah! this claustrophobic depiction of wartime life aboard a German U-boat submarine was based on a novel by Lothar Gunther Buchheim, who served as a naval war correspondent.
By the way, name of the week.
Lothar Gunther Buchheim?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
That was my real name before I changed it to Nick Cagilio. I don't know if you knew that or not.
So the whole backstory about it being Italian and
no, it's all fake.
All fake.
Yeah.
You're historically inaccurate.
My real name is yes, I'm historically inaccurate. My real name is Lothar Gunther Buchheim. Isn't that what they say at the beginning of Def Leppard?
for us younger folks, the beginning of Offspring songs.
Oh, is that what they do that in the Offspring?
They paid, I think, something like $18,000 just to take that part.
Of the beginning of, what the hell's the name of that song? Rock of Ages? Is that Rock of Ages? Is that the song that starts out with Lothar Gunther Buchheim?
Yes, Rock of Ages, yeah. And then Pretty Fly for the White for what? Pretty Fly for
oh,
a White Guy.
Oh, they did that in Pretty Fly for a White Guy?
Yeah, the very beginning.
Oh, wow. Hey, can you play the beginning of that? So people kind of, if people play the beginning of the actual Def Leppard, Rock of Ages. Anyway, it sounds like Lothar Gunther Buchheim. I can't believe. Wow, that's fast. That's really fast. Wait, why is it so fast? What's going on? Where are
oh,
you?
You know what? I'm playing the Rave DJ mashup of
oh,
the two.
Okay. I was going to say, what the...
you know Rave DJ's real name? No, Gunther Buchheim.
Oh, there it is. Lothar Gunther Buchheim. That was really... I was like, wait a minute. What is it? Is that the Chipmunks version of the song? What the hell was that? Anyway, it's on the album Pyromania. So... Anyway, they say Das Boot is very accurate. I'm glad it's accurate because it's a submarine movie, therefore it rules. All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, my guest will be Lothar Gunther Buchheim. The news is next. Yeah, man. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Friday morning. Yeah. And we've got Fly Jams Friday coming up, so get your requests ready to go. DJ Shagru will be ready to spin them on our weekly celebration of all things funky and R&B. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we also have, straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies and You Big Dummy. We have been talking about movies based on true stories and which ones are accurate and which ones aren't. We were talking about this because Rudy is celebrating, the movie Rudy is celebrating its 25th anniversary. There's a screening August 6th at Music Box Theater with the real Rudy there. And a lot of the things that I've heard about the real life version of that is that everybody pretty much hated this Rudy kid, but in the movie they love him. So we've been talking about movies that are accurate and maybe not so accurate. And we were just talking about Das Boot, based upon the novel by Lothar Gunther Buchheim, which we've discovered is one of the finest names ever. Das Boot is a stunning depiction of the confinement, tedium, and terror of ordinary men caught in the war beneath the waves. Dan, have you ever seen Das Boot?
I have not.
Esmeralda, what about you?
No.
Oh, it's really good. You know why? It's a submarine movie.
It's probably not better than Bong Marine.
No, that's going to be the ultimate. That's the ultimate movie. Bong Marine. So we went through a list, right, of submarine movies. And I think, did I like all of them, or was there just one? Was it one or two that a...
No, I think you liked all of them.
I think I did.
Unfortunately, Esmeralda, you were off that morning, so you did not get, you did not experience it.
Oh, she was off?
Yes, because we did, and now we did like an hour and 10 on it. Because that was before, that was the 2 a.m. start, post Monday morning movie reviews, which had gone to 3:45.
Oh, okay.
Because I, you know, secretly producer Dan was like, are we going to be able to get an hour and 10 minutes out of this? And we did.
We did. We did. Who was in for Esmeralda? Do you remember who was? How do you remember that she wasn't here?
Because
of my witty. She
would have been a part. She would have been a part of the conversation.
No, because we had thought of the idea on like a Thursday, and I remember joking with Esmeralda, like, "Oh, you might miss the submarine talk, you know, because you're going to be off."
So it's either Roger, or Joanne.
Yeah,
I want to say it was Joanne because it was a Sunday night and a Monday morning.
Yeah, it's probably Joanne.
Submarine movies. Yeah, I like them all, man. Like them all. Down Periscope.
That movie rules.
What's the way you don't like Down Periscope?
Yeah.
Who else was in that? Kelsey Grammer.
Rip Torn.
God, Rip Torn. Rip Torn, you know what? Rip Torn? Genius. Freddie Got Fingered. That's the second time in two mornings that Freddie Got Fingered has been mentioned. That's not an unusual thing, though.
Lauren Holly.
Oh, that's right, Lauren Holly. Whatever happened to her?
Bruce Dern, Harry Dean Stanton, Rob Schneider.
Wow, what a cast.
Yeah.
Directed by Robert Altman. No. Yeah, Down Periscope. U-571, that's a good one. That's got my main man in it, McConaughey. Come on, McConaughey in a submarine? How am I not going to love that movie? And then, Esmeralda, do you ever see Below?
No. What's that about?
That's a haunted submarine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, with Scott Foley. So, Noel from Felicity is in that one. Below. You ever see that one, Dan?
Can't say that I have.
Nobody did. That movie was out for like 2 minutes. Based on a true story. No, I'm kidding. Written by Lothar Gunther Buchheim.
That's right. Real quick, people are saying that people did eventually come around to liking Rudy. Because Tim points out they did carry him off the field. And Robert said that they did, in fact, put the jerseys on the coach's desk.
Oh, okay.
So they came around to him and were rooting for him, but there was also a little bit of because he was going so far.
Well, there was none of that in the movie. You know what I mean? If there was any kind of resentment, you know, early on, it wasn't in the movie. So, all right. And also, when you cast Samwise, you automatically got a likable guy. So, 12 Years a Slave is considered one of the most historically accurate movies. And Tora, Tora, Tora was a documentary-like attack on Pearl Harbor. The technical advisors from both sides were spared no expense to make the sets and scenes as true to life as possible. Tora, Tora, Tora is a really good movie. It's a really, really good war movie. The Pianist is apparently very historically accurate. And also one of those movies that you can only watch once. Have you seen The Pianist?
I have not.
Esmeralda, have you seen it?
Which one is that?
Adrian Brody.
No.
Directed by Polanski. It's one of those movies. It's like, you know, it's like Requiem for a Dream. It's one of those movies that once is enough. Like, I don't need to, there's no reason. I've only seen Requiem for a Dream once. And I will not watch it again, especially the last, like, 15 minutes. The last 15 minutes of that movie. I wanted to kill Darren Aronofsky after that movie. I was like, man, dude, please. And he's not known for his subtlety. You know what I mean? Aronofsky's not known, you know. God, you know, it's almost a year since Mother came out and like six people saw that movie.
Me included.
I loved it. I loved it. It was one of my favorite movies last year.
My parents saw it.
Oh, no! What?
Yeah. Well, they were going through your list.
No, don't blame this on me.
I didn't blame it on you.
Wait. Did they know ahead of time? I mean, were they warned? Were they
forewarned? Well, they usually give me we got this in the mail, and I always try to be like, if it's something crazy, I'm like, you know.
So they didn't consult you first?
Well, I think I might have said, like, you know, I don't know about that one.
Oh, God, I can't believe. What did they think?
I think my dad And I don't remember what my dad said. I can only remember what my mom said. And she kind of described the ending. And she just like, Daniel! Oh! And then walked away.
I can't believe that. I went with my parents to see that movie.
I remember.
And when it was over, you know, my dad, you remember?
Best review of the year.
He goes, well, that was something. Look at that weird thing. Well, that was something. I can't believe your parents saw Mother. That's insane. Isn't that insane, Esmeralda? Why would...
Parents are cool.
Oh, God. No, I just feel bad now because they were looking at my list.
Don't feel bad. I mean, there was plenty of other ones that didn't like more.
Jeez. I did go out of my... I do want to say this.
I went out
of my way to warn people about the content of that movie and that it was clearly not for everybody. So... God, I feel awful now. Yeah, Nick, it's your fault that my parents sat through Mother. I bet there are a lot of people out there right now going, yeah, it is your fault that I saw that movie. I'll tell you, man, I got a lot of bad response from people. People were mad that I recommended this. They were really mad. I'm trying to think of what movies that I recommended that people were really pissed off about. That's right near the top. I bet there's been a lot, though. Hereditary is another one that was a recent one. A lot of people were like, "What do you?" It's not like I didn't warn you. I warned everybody. Going out of my way. Black Swan. Speaking of Darren Aronofsky, Black Swan is another one. I recommend Black Swan was one of my favorite movies of that year, and people were like, "What the hell, man? What's wrong with you?" It was a movie rules. So, Esmeralda, you've seen Black Swan.
You know what? I haven't.
Oh, wow. It's really good. It's great. It's Aronofsky through and through. Hey, Esmeralda, do you know the story of the first time I saw Pi? You see the movie Pi, the Aronofsky movie Pi, black and white movie about math and stuff?
No.
It's Aronofsky's first movie.
I know. It's a black and white movie about math.
Well, it's about much more than that. It's a hard movie to describe, like a lot of Aronofsky movies to describe. But let me just quickly set the stage here. Dan, you know the story about the first time I saw Pi.
I don't know if I do.
Oh, really? Okay, well, you know the movie Pi.
Dan, I have not seen it, but I'm familiar with it.
But you're familiar with it. It's crazy. It's insane. It's Darren Aronofsky. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It's black and white, and there's math and all kinds of crazy science stuff going on, and it really is off-putting in that way that most Darren Aronofsky movies are. Like, he puts you on edge, he screws with your mind, and that's what Pi is. That's what that movie is. It's Aronofsky in black and white at his most insane and virtually incomprehensible. So here's the scene, Dan. Let me set the scene for you. It's a Thursday night at the Bruin View. And my factory friends and I are there for our weekly midnight showing of Dazed and Confused. And we got there early, and I can't remember, you know, we got there early, and we watched like half of the 10 o'clock start, because they would have an 8 o'clock movie, a 10 o'clock movie, and then the midnight movie would be Dazed. So we're there for we're watching the 10 o'clock movie, I can't remember what it was. You know, we're drinking, we're pounding back beers, we're getting ready for Dazed. And again, by this point, I had probably seen Dazed and Confused about 500 times already, and we would go like every Thursday, where we were. Every Thursday night at midnight, we were at the Vic. At Bruin View watching Dazed and Confused. So we're there, and the place is pretty crowded. It's like half full, and the 10 o'clock movie ends, and we're all getting ready, and we're all, you know, we're all liquored up a little bit. We're ready for fun, and, you know, and we're all ha-ha, and then our announcement comes over the PA. And the announcement says, ladies and gentlemen, we will not be showing Dazed and Confused tonight at the midnight show. People start booing, and they start going nuts. They're like, we will offer refunds, or, you know, we'll give you free passes. You can come back and see the movie for free the next time. Instead, we will be premiering a new film called Pi. Instead, and it's a first time. It's the first time it's been screened. It's a world exclusive, and it's this brand new movie called Pi. So people are booing, and, you know, like three quarters of the people get out and they go out and, you know, to get their passes. And I'm like, well, it's a premiere. I'm going to stay. And so like four or five of my friends are like, no, I'm leaving. We're going to go to the bar across the street. And I'm like, I'm going to stay. I'm going to watch this movie. So, all right, and I've had, you know, 3-4 pitchers of beer at this point. And so I'm with like 3 other people. And you guys haven't seen Pi, but the most inappropriate thing that you could watch when you are drunk and ready to watch Dazed and Confused is Darren Aronofsky's Pi. Let me just say that your head is not in the right frame of mind to watch that movie. And it starts, and then it begins, and a half an hour in, we were all like, "What in God's name is happening?" You know, we were getting drunk, we were ready to go, all right, and say all the lines and all that stuff. We're ready for Dazed and Confused, and all of a sudden, I get this insane black and white movie about math, and I'm like, "What? What the hell?" And I stayed for the whole thing. We stayed for the whole thing, and then afterwards, we went to the bar and discussed what we thought was the, you know. So that's how I saw Pi. That's how I saw it. I was ready to see Dazed and Confused. I'd had a bunch of beer, and then this thing comes on. And it totally freaked me out. I was like, what in God's name is happening? I just want to see Wooderson. I don't know what the hell's going on. So anyway, that's how I first saw Pi. I saw it again when it was released, because it was released about a month later. I saw it again when it was released. I was sober, and I was ready for it, and I loved it. But the first time I saw Pi, I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I need help right now to leave the country, because I just don't understand what's happening in the world. So I don't know if anybody was there. I don't know if people were there that night, you know, because almost everybody left. There were like 15 of us left in the theater watching this movie. But so anyway, and then the following week, we came in, you know, we went again, and then, you know, I went up to the manager, and I'm like, "You're showing Dazed and Confused tonight, right? You're not going to show some weird experimental film." They're like, no. We were under contract to show Pi at midnight on a Thursday. Anyway. So, all right, we got to take a break. We're going to talk a little bit more about movies that are based on true stories. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about root beer, the tastiest root beers. 9 brands have been tested, and we're going to try that out. And if you enjoy the root beer, we'll talk about that too. Let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Well, hello there. Hi, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here on the 18th floor at 303 Wacker. And this is Studio D, baby. Yeah! Friday morning here, and then we will be doing Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. That's all coming up right here on WGN. 312-981-7200 for talk and text, if you would like to jump in. We've been talking about movies that are based on true stories and which ones are accurate and which ones are not. And so, yeah, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You know, it's most of the movies on this list, Dan, World War II.
Yeah.
So I guess they've been, you know, getting those correct. Because after The Pianist here, there's Schindler's List is on here. Steven Spielberg's award-winning movie is considered by many to be the greatest film about the horrors of the Holocaust ever made. This tale of German industrialist Oskar Schindler's strategy to save Jews from mechanized extermination is a showcase of highs and lows of the human condition. Holocaust survivor Leopold Pfefferberg spent years working to have this story of one man's struggle to save those caught in the maw of a destructive hate machine made, and Spielberg's grim and realistic portrayal helped ensure that it would never be forgotten. So that's an accurate one as well. And then the next one is Downfall, which is about the surreal madness of the last 10 days of Hitler's life when he was holed up in a bunker. It's a terrific movie. Have you ever seen that? You ever seen that movie?
No.
It's really good. That's where that you know that it's an internet, I don't know what you call it. It's not, I don't know if it's a GIF, it's a clip that they use, that's it's used as a joke where Hitler is in his bunker and he's banging on the,
that's from
Downfall. That's a clip from Downfall. It's become like a meme or whatever the hell, a GIF or a clip, whatever it is. It's become like an internet thing. And that clip that you see, you know, and they use it for different situations, you know,
right,
like whatever's happening in the news or whatever's happening in entertainment, they sift it through that. And but that's from Downfall. That scene is from the movie Downfall. The last one on this list is Apollo 13. This tale of a brush with fatal disaster in orbit was based on a book written by science writer Jeffrey Kluger and Apollo 13 mission commander Jim Lovell, as well as firsthand testimony from other astronauts. Made with the technical support of NASA, the historical docudrama was praised for its exact reproduction of Apollo 13 modules and control rooms. Zero-gravity scenes were filmed in the same KC-135 plane, also called the Vomit Comet, used to simulate weightlessness during the astronaut training. The tense tale of survival in space against the odds gained universal praise from real astronauts and earned Oscars and 2 wins out of 9 nominations. Have I ever told Rod Pyle that I fell asleep during that movie?
No, probably because you want him back on the show.
Exactly. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say, you know, because it's bad enough that he thinks I'm crazy for loving Interstellar. That's already, he brings that up all the time. But yeah, I fell asleep when I saw Apollo 13. I fell asleep. People think I'm not. I don't like that movie. People think I'm nuts. I thought that movie was like, you know, a great cast. There's nothing. You know what I mean? It's a phenomenal cast. First of all, Bill Paxton's in it. So right there, how do I fall asleep with a movie with Bill Paxton in it? You can't fall asleep with a movie with Bill Paxton in it. Because he's Bill Paxton. So anyway, so Apollo 13, considered one of the most historically accurate movies of all time. And I'm assuming Rod Pyle, if all these astronauts and everything, I'm assuming Rod Pyle agrees with that. I'll bring it up the next time, but I won't tell him. Remind me not to tell him that I fell asleep during the movie.
Is it going to be like one of those things, don't think of an elephant?
Yeah, right, exactly.
And you're just going to be
And then I'm just thinking, I fell asleep. And then I'll be interviewing Rod, and I'll be like, yeah, Rod, so anyway, hey, I fell asleep during Apollo 13.
So I hear there's a lake on Mars,
right.
Furthering the possibility of the fact that we're going to be able to live there, and right. There might be alien life forms, and that reminds me of Apollo 13, where I fell asleep.
That's exactly what's going to happen. By the way, we got to get him on to talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big development.
That is some big news.
Very, very salty water. A thick, very gooey, salty water has been found on Mars. So
you say gooey?
Yeah, it's like there's so much salt in it that it's like thick.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. Or at least that's the way it was described in one of the news reports. Yeah. Hey, it's cool, though, because there was like water on Mars. I'm sure Rod...
But it's real salty.
It's real, real thick and gooey and salty.
See, but you know what? We'll have water and we'll have salt.
Exactly right. We can live there now. I think we can.
That's all
you
need.
We can move to Mars now. Sometimes, you know, with what's happening here, I'd like to be in Mars. I'd like to be on Mars.
Sometimes, with what's happening on our show, I feel like I'm on Mars.
By the way, that's how I felt when I first saw Pi. You see how it comes full circle?
Hey, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. There's a reason I have a plaque in the ground.
That plaque that's shining up all the way to Mars.
Oh, man, I did. I felt like I was on Mars watching Pi, drunk, ready for Dazed and Confused at the Vic. Come
drinking
on, seriously.
Really salty water.
Drinking really gooey, salty water. All right. It's time to take a break. So we got the news coming up, and then after the news, we've got the results of 9 brands of root beer that were taste tested, and we're going to give you those results. All right. News is up next.